Hello, welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. What a weird, stressful, and frightful year. As this week's guest put it to me recently, a sad and scary year. Indeed, how are we dealing with it? COVID pandemic, business shutdowns, layoffs, police killing black people, protests, summer pandemic, resurgence, more black people killed, more protests, fires, hurricanes, political turmoil, a fall wave of COVID, more shutdowns, more police shootings, a fraught national election, more protests, president voted out of office, won't concede as COVID spikes to new heights. There's plenty to be stressed about, so stick around. Our guest may have some very helpful tips for you, for me, and for all of us. His name is John Cruz. He's been a psychiatrist for nearly 30 years and has helped people and patients through many crises. In addition to direct patient care, he's taught basic psychopharmacology to psychotherapy interns and has spoken at psychiatry conferences about gay marriage, gay families, and the biology of emotions. He also has a PhD in neuroscience. He specializes in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and he's written a book about it with a provocative title, Recognizing Adult ADHD, What Donald Trump Can Teach Us About Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. We'll talk about his book and about ADHD a little bit later, but we'd like to spend the first 10 to 15 minutes talking about how to deal with the stress we're all going through. Dr. John Cruz, welcome to Out in the Bay.
I'm delighted to be here today.
So first, a little self-revealing, I'll say, that my behavior over the past 8+ months has been eating more, drinking more, exercising less, definitely a more pessimistic outlook overall. And I've honestly been having some freaky dreams lately, freakier than normal, than before, I should say, you know, some nightmares here and then. And my bad habits seem to be exacerbated. I'm disorganized, clutter. I couldn't find your book before our interview, John. Is this typical that stress under stress, our bad habits get worse?
Yeah, this is really typical. So, I mean, certainly measurable degrees of depression and anxiety are more common at times of stress like that, but even what we call sub-syndromal levels, where you're not reaching full depression or full anxiety, but are more worried, more distracted, more negative, more pessimistic, doing less good self-care, are certainly common at times like this.
What are you seeing in your practice and hearing among your professional peers about how our country's and our region's mental health is right now? And you know, how many are experiencing anxiety, depression, or other mental health illnesses compared to before?
I have been busier than ever the last 4 years, but then about in midsummer, and it wasn't the first month or two of COVID, but when it became clear that, wait a minute, this isn't going away and nobody's going to tell us when it's going away, I've been the busiest I've been in 26 or 7 years. Because people I had been seeing, you know, infrequently felt that the need to come in more regularly. People that I had last worked with a decade ago or 15 years ago suddenly popped up again because their lives had been going well until job losses or needing to move or needing to adjust in some other ways to these stressful times. And when I chat with my colleagues, they're experiencing similar things. And certainly in our area, you know, not to minimize the wildfires themselves, affected people in terms of stress, in terms of where is it even safe to live. And there's even some evidence that the particulate matter in the air can affect mood. I mean, there have been studies mostly out of China showing pollution levels correlate pretty well with admissions to the ER for suicidality. So there are effects at levels that we're not even consciously aware of all the time that are having their effect on us. And I'd say, you know, this is an era where we talk a lot about intersectionality, and I would put Trump at the center of all this mess. And I'm not going to get too political. I'm not going to get into his bad specific policies. But what I'm talking about is how his ADHD contributes to making him a leader who isn't a leader. So he's not planning ahead. Mm-hmm. He's not preparing. He's not presenting himself as someone who cares about the whole country. And that makes all of these burdens, all of these problems much more stressful. And it's interesting, even the first year he got in office, anxiety was up everywhere, but that included Republicans as well as Democrats. So even people who voted for him, who claimed to like his policies, whatever we may decide what his policies even are, they felt more anxious, and they felt anxious because this guy is so unpredictable, he's so unconventional, he's so not conveying, not following normal norms, and not, again, providing clear, consistent leadership, that exacerbates all the chaos we are in right now.
How are you helping your patients deal with this? What kind of advice could you possibly give to all of us?
So, you know, this isn't an in-depth therapy session, so I'll just start with some sort of simplistic basics that are really good things to keep in mind. One is the serenity prayer, that whether you believe in a God or not, you don't need to, but give me the serenity to deal with the things that are going on right now that I can't change. Give me the courage to change the things that are changeable, and give me the wisdom to discern the difference. So one, just separating out, you know, none of us individually are going to change COVID, but you can change your own individual behavior in terms of what your own risk factors are, who you're associating with, whether you're wearing a mask or not. Similarly, you know, with the election, no one of us is going to change the outcome of the election, but voting, donating money, donating time. So there's aspects of it you can control and have an impact on, and there's others that we have to accept are out of our hands, and it's sort of differentiating what is what in that realm. Another thing you alluded to earlier was sort of bad habits, and it's common that when we particularly need to be taking best care of ourselves, we often don't take care of ourselves. And I am a huge fan of scheduling, not just because I work with lots of adults with ADHD, but if you know, put down on a piece of paper on your electronic calendar that my bedtime's going to be 10 o'clock, you're much more likely to get to bed at 10 than to be doom scrolling or sitting up watching election results or, you know, listening to podcasts to distract you from it all till 2 in the morning. So I say that there's sort of four basics people should always attend to and really make sure that you are doing them each day or taking care of them. One is sleep, and we know that enough sleep is crucially important, 7-8 hours. But what we know that's equally important to the duration of sleep is the same time of sleep. So you have a circadian clock, a 24-hour clock in your head. If you're used to sleeping midnight to 8, it's not the same if you stay up till 3 a.m. and sleep till 11 a.m. You've gotten 8 hours, but that's not the same amount of restfulness. It doesn't prepare your brain in the same way. So getting the same sleep and getting sufficient sleep. So sleep is one big one. Eating is the second one, that you have to fuel your body, your brain. If you're waiting till you're hungry before you eat, then there's something wrong because you're already hungry. Third one is exercise. And particularly when we're constrained inside by COVID restrictions, it's still important to get physical activity, either doing it outside in where you can minimize contact with humans, or even developing a routine or regimen in your own space is good. And then the fourth basic that I say is either meditation, if you have a meditation practice, or even just setting aside relaxation time when you're not specifically trying to perform a task, either trying to take care of your family members or trying to prepare for school, trying to do your job, some time that you're doing something that doesn't have someone else's goal in mind.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So,
I didn't hear this on your list, but it struck me that one of the things you said earlier was that we are all going through this. I mean, society is going through this whole thing that's anxiety provoking for so many reasons. And there is, at least for me, some comfort in knowing that it's not just me. It's easy to blame ourselves and thinking, what am I doing wrong? And realize that everybody's going through this, so give myself a break. We all need to give ourselves a break and give other people a break. And, you know, anyway, that's my thought on that.
That's a good point.
You mentioned doom scrolling, and I just heard that for the first time a few days ago. Can you mention that a little bit more about how suggestions for disconnecting from social media that we seem to be more and more addicted to?
So one part of my book, which we'll go into a little later, is that our whole society is getting more ADD-like, and that we are primed to respond to whatever is in front of us, and that we feel we need to get on top of it, and we're sort of scrambling at a superficial level to chase information. So people are spending hours looking at election results or looking at counting results or worrying about, you know, the Supreme Court battle even before things happen. So a couple things. I tell people to treat media like a medication. And by that, I mean you need the right dose, and too much of it can be an overdose. And the right dose differs for different people, but I'd say probably 10 to 20 minutes a day is enough for you to actually keep aware of all the news. And we like to think that there's all these breaking events, new things happening. I'd say most of that is just chatter. And most of it, it doesn't really matter at the end. I mean, if you didn't learn that Ruth Bader Ginsburg died at 2 in the afternoon, you waited till 6 o'clock, what difference did that make if you didn't know right away? Or if you didn't know, you know, that the Georgia results weren't called till 2 a.m.? I mean, most of this, we're sitting on the edge as if something important is about to happen. And most of the important things, you can check in once or twice a day. Now, you know, if Kim Jong-un launches a nuclear missile at San Francisco, yeah, you should be plugged in and know what's happening. And I don't want to make light of that, because unfortunately that's more a possibility now than it was 4 years ago. But almost all the things we label news are chatter. So there's a small amount of news. And again, you need to titrate it. You need to find a dose that works for you. And a few other things with news. I would strongly recommend to people reading news rather than watching it on a video format, because when you're reading it, different parts of your brain are engaged. You are in control of the rate of information coming in. Whereas again, if we're watching it, it's all bombarding at us at the rate they want to project it. And two, visual imagery is much more evocative and feeds into emotional centers rather than the rational parts of our brain, which is, I would argue, I mean, both are useful and important, but too much of emotion gets flooded in what's portrayed as news. And then the other thing I say is, you know, there's about 2 inches of news and about 5 feet of chatter, you know, and lots of the chatter can be interesting, it can be fascinating, but, you know, who's going to win the Georgia elections and what implications that has for Mitch McConnell and blah, 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 blah. All of that's chatter.
Okay. You're hearing Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guest is Dr. John Cruz, a psychiatrist in San Francisco who specializes in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. We've been talking about, hearing some of his tips for dealing with the multiple stressors of this year, 2020. We're going to shift now and talk a little bit more about his book about ADHD. His book is called Recognizing ADHD, What Donald Trump Can Teach Us About Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. But it's not political. Cruz says that Joe Biden also has signs of ADHD. So, John, what prompted you to write this book? What do you hope readers will get out of it?
I mean, my main thrust with the book is knowing that there are millions of adults in this country who have ADHD who don't even know that they have ADHD. And there's lots of good blogs, podcasts, books written about ADHD. But the people who read them are those who already know that they have the condition. So I was trying to reach out to a broader audience, which we know is out there, who might not otherwise be attuned in reading a mental health book or a book about ADHD, and using Trump, hopefully, as the hook. So that was my primary goal. But a strong secondary goal was explaining, helping to use ADHD to explain Trump. So I use Trump to explain ADHD. I use ADHD to explain Trump, because if you don't get the ADHD component, he's completely baffling. I mean, that's why we have more than 400 books written about him. If he were a simple narcissist, we've had narcissists who are presidents before, but narcissists aren't always shooting themselves in the foot. They're not always blurting things out that make themselves look incompetent, make themselves look uninformed, make themselves look weak and vacillating. But so much of what Trump does, and I'm not saying he doesn't have narcissism, but it's a combination of narcissism and ADHD that make him sort of uniquely such a weird president.
And it's the ADHD that perhaps makes him less predictable. And well, yeah. Let me just back up a little bit and say that I know that you had a bit of a hard time getting media attention for this book, perhaps in part because in an election year, the book appeared to be attacking one of the candidates, the incumbent, President Trump. But you are saying this is not partisan at all. You're just trying to use him as a prominent figure that everybody can observe and see. And this is observable behavior as opposed to like narcissism, which would be something you'd really have to get more in depth.
Yeah. So that's one of the big distinctions I make in the book. ADHD is our only major mental health category that our official definition is based on purely behavioral criteria. So does he interrupt people? Does he blurt out comments? Does he fidget all the time? Does he make careless mistakes because he's inattentive to details? And all of them are written purely behaviorally, and he has to do them pervasively and in multiple situations. But he only needs 6 of those official symptoms to be diagnosed as an adult with ADHD, 5 or 6. And he has, of the 18 symptoms, more than 13 of them unequivocally. Some people have said, well, lots of the narcissism definition is based on behaviors. But there, the behaviors, acting in a way that's selfish or acting in a way that's demeaning the value of others, there you actually have to know the motivation and the impact. You can't just say that action is showing he doesn't care about others, because it could be he's completely oblivious of others, which is different than knowing they're there and not caring about them. So I'm not saying mm-hmm. he doesn't have narcissism, but I'd say that's a judgment call. And until you get to interview him and really listen to what his motivations are, and he may or may not know what his motivations are, there's some judgment involved. Where I'd argue with ADHD, there is a much purer objectivity to the official diagnostic label. Now
you've recently written that Joe Biden too likely has ADHD. And, what's that based on, and how does he show it differently than Trump does? Or do they really display it the same way?
So one of my catchphrases is that any politician who has a phrase gaffe-prone attached to him, which Biden has had, you should always be thinking right away of ADHD, because what's a politician? It's someone we've hired to get up and talk in front of us and talk in ways that are reassuring, that are positive, that are inspiring faith or following or allegiance, and someone who's making gaffes, making mistakes, is somehow screwing up more than we'd expect someone in that position, so that they're saying something impulsively. So again, there are people who make gaffes or people who make mistakes who don't have ADHD, but given that one element of ADHD is impulsive blurting things out, of saying what's at the top of their mind without thinking of the full ramifications, that's one piece of it. And so the big difference between Trump and Biden on the ADHD scale, one is that, again, Trump unequivocally meets so many more of these 18 criteria. Biden meets at least 5 or 6, so he meets a bare minimum threshold. And each of these symptoms, he fits to a less strong or less extreme extent. So, and the debates between Trump and Biden were informative, because all of us could imagine Trump sitting there with Hillary Clinton or with Barack Obama or with Kamala Harris or some other politician. And I think we could imagine all of those actually completely resisting all of Trump's provocations and absurd statements. But there were at least several times Biden had to jump in and, call him pathetic or call him whatever he did. And again,
oh, shut up, man.
Yeah. So in Biden's political career, it's not just he's blurted things out impulsively at other times. He's known for, having a hot temper, for being reactive. And one important piece that a majority of people with ADHD have is this is not just an intellectual attention problems, time management problems, but actually control of emotions. Emotional dysregulation is a core piece of ADHD. So again, the difference there is Biden's ADHD to the extent it's there. And I mean, one of the ironies of calling him Sleepy Joe, this is a guy whose reputation has been sort of the energizer bunny of being active, being engaged in things. He's the one riding a bicycle around. Trump's sitting in his golf cart if he's getting any exercise. But also with comorbidities. So lots of people with ADHD do have other things, whether it's depression, substance abuse, anxiety, or in this case, narcissism. And with Trump, it's that combination of narcissism and ADHD, that the ADHD means he's not paying attention to things, not learning things, but it's the narcissism that tells him, I can just go ahead and keep blurting things out and running, steamrolling over everything. Whereas Biden, again, is distractible. He had trouble in law school, he had trouble focusing, but he's someone who has learned that he doesn't know everything, and he actively, avidly seeks out more information. He seeks out experts. He consults with people. So I'm not saying, anyone who's run for president has some narcissistic traits, but Biden, one of the other striking things in the debates, Biden was able to acknowledge where he had made mistakes. Trump has not inability to do that. It's a narcissism in combination with the ADHD for Trump. And ADHD and, you know, whether we call it better upbringing with this family or better genetics, or I don't know what combination of other factors, but they bring other things to the table in addition to their ADHD.
I want to stress here that you're not saying there's anything wrong with ADHD, but it's not recognized by so many people, and that's the problem. It's like approximately 4.5%, maybe a little bit less than that, of the U.S. population has ADHD. And how does that affect us societally?
So one of the things is that I would say even the mental health experts tend to minimize the severity or significance of ADHD. So again, it's commonly framed as this is kids who are distractible, this is kids who are late turning in their homework, this is kids who are blurting things in their class or running around in circles. But when we just look at mortality rates, kids with ADHD are on average going to die 10 years earlier than their non-ADHD peers. That's a big effect on longevity as the effects of depression, which, you know, leads to suicidality and other things, or even diabetes shaves 10 years off your lifespan. So, and ADHD is not something trivial. This is something that actually kills people, and not just kills people, disrupts careers, disrupts education, disrupts relationships. It has a pervasive effect. With Trump, and I've written an article on this, is so much of his response to the COVID vaccine was driven, or some of his lack of response, by his ADHD, starting with what we call temporal discounting. People with ADHD pay more attention to what's going on right now, what's interesting in front of their face. So, you know, there's good documentation. Obama and his team told them one of the biggest things you have to be worried about is an infectious agent that's going to come into this country. Here we have this CDC division that's set up just to surveil for it and, you know, prepare us on the early stages. And Trump's like, yeah, that's not happening now. Let's not pay attention to it. Let's cut the funding for that. And similarly, lots of his dismissive warning or dismissiveness of the warnings as they were coming in is tied to his ADHD. And then when it became clear it was a problem, you know, problems with organization, problems with structuring his response, problems with prioritizing, which are all features of ADHD, have clearly led to tens of thousands of people dying in this country that didn't need to be dead. And then the third, I mean, one of the features of ADHD that got the most attention is, you know, his rambling at the news conferences. You know, when he said, you know, inject bleach under your skin and get some UV light, that's going to kill the virus. And then he defended it later, saying he was being sarcastic. And I think on the left, we often overly criticize some of his comments. I mean, this wasn't a guy ordering his followers to inject it under the skin. When he gives orders, those are 2 or 3 word sentences. Lock her up. You know, liberate Michigan.
Right.
What he was doing is ADHD rambling, just musing off the top of his head. And when he later calls it sarcasm, it wasn't sarcasm, but what he was saying is, I wasn't really being serious. I was just blabbing when I shouldn't have been blabbing. Because one of the things, and public health experts said this from the beginning, the best public health measures for dealing with the pandemic is, one, you get the experts talking, not the politicians. Two, you tell them what we definitively know and what we don't know. And three, you help people understand what the risks are, so you don't do what he's done with, you know, blobbing about masks or not masks, or touting vaccines before they're ready, or medical treatments.
One of the things you've also talked about is trying to reduce stigmatization against all neuroatypical individuals. So, and I think in one of the emails you sent me, you had to pose this question of whether neuroatypical is even a useful distinction. How, I'm not sure exactly where I'm going with that question, but how do you want to try? You're talking about the problems that Trump is displaying and the problems it's causing for the country that he has ADHD, but at the same time, so many people have it. Let's destigmatize this and make it, you know, a treatable and rational approach to it.
Yeah. So one of it is getting to the destigmatization is giving a balanced view of again, and getting back to the public health command of tell people what we actually know about this condition. So even though it may contribute to impulsivity, to distractibility, to trouble focusing, there's probably certain positive aspects. And one of them is an authenticity. So Trump as a politician was tremendously successful because of this very same blurting at whatever is at the top of his mind. There's a viewpoint out there. I don't particularly share it, that if a politician has to actually stop and think before they talk, they must be hiding something. We know with Trump, he's not hiding anything. It's all out there. And again, that authenticity, you know, even there in personal interactions, comes across in for many people with ADHD. Two, thinking outside of the box or creativity or whatever you talk about it, you know, flying to North Korea to meet with Kim Jong-un was something that none of his when Hillary Clinton even mentioned that was a possibility, she was excoriated by the Republicans. So this has been someone, I would argue, because of his lack of follow-through and some other things related to his ADHD, he hasn't capitalized on it, but he has opened up new venues, new possibilities by his creativity, by his unconventional thinking, by the nonlinearity that ADHD brings. So part of it, and some of that just his high energy enthusiasm, and sort of infectious enthusiasm, whether that's charisma or not, I think also is a common aspect of ADHD. They're so excited about whatever they're talking about, build the wall or what else, that they convey that in others. So one is pointing out that there are positive aspects or attributes to ADHD as well as these detriments. Two is explaining things in as much, again, detail in what we know in terms of the biology, in terms of what we know in terms of effective treatments, in terms of what we know in origins, so people can understand it. And three, trying to do that in as non-judgmental way as possible. And there it's a loaded issue with Trump, because so many people have such a strong aversive reaction. You know, I've had liberal people who said, you are giving him excuses. He's the demon incarnate. I don't want to hear that he has ADHD, even if it helps me understand what's going on. I just think he's a bad, evil man. And I would argue, he's a man. You might think he's a god. I think he's a man. And given that he's a human, understanding some of what's going on, I think, gives us more power. And it gives us more permission. I mean, you don't have to listen to his pronouncements about injecting hydroxychloroquine, you know, doing things if you know he's just blurting off the top of his head because he has ADHD. Now, why we thought that was a good person to choose for president is a different issue. But again, understanding what's going on actually gives you permission, gives you understanding to not listen as closely to what he's saying.
And this can be something that applies to people in our personal lives as well as prominent politicians or other prominent figures.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to Out in the Bay. I want to thank my guest, Dr. John Cruz, author of Recognizing Adult ADHD, What Donald Trump Can Teach Us About Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. John, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We'll have a link to the book on our site and some of the blog posts that he's written about it. Our website is outinthebay.org, where you can also hear this show, past shows, and share them with friends, and sign up for our weekly e-news. Please do sign up for our weekly e-news and subscribe to our podcast, as growing our numbers could help us get sustainable funding. Outinthebay.org. We are a nonprofit. Please consider a tax-deductible donation. Just click the donate button on our website, outinthebay.org. That's outinthebay.org. We thank you so much. Thanks to Kendra Klang for helping produce this week's conversation, and to co-producer Truk Nguyen, who's hosting next week's show. Hey, would you like to join our team? There are many ways we could use your talents in audio production, social media, program distribution, fundraising, and more. Let us know how you might be able to help. Please write to us, outinthebaysf@gmail.com. That's outinthebaysf@gmail.com. Thanks also to radio stations KALW and KSFP, and to Holly Mead, who wrote and performed our theme music. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for joining us out in the Bay. ¶¶